Hello, everybody. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of V-Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. V-Speaks was created a couple of years ago as an added platform to our sister publication, V-Magazine. We found that telling stories like this on top of the printed pages just brought all the stories to life. I'm so excited today to have Edward San Juan in the studio. He is the president of EF San Juan, a family-owned and operated business that is an amazing business success story, all-American success story, and we're going to get into it all. It's a custom millwork company, and Edward, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Lisa.
You're welcome.
To be here.
Glad you're here. So we have a rich history between us in that you've been an advertiser with the magazine, had been on and off since we started. Mm-hmm. Even 13, 14 years ago is when Jerry came over with a film crew, which before film crews really weren't we were ahead of the curve.
That was quite a thing.
That was quite a thing with a big photo shoot. And it was you and your dad, because Eddie at that time was not in the picture.
Right. Still in school.
And so we go back a ways. And then about 5 years ago, we started working with you on marketing as well. And you're in the magazine. So we have a lot of history. That said, when I was getting ready for this interview and I was watching the documentary that we did a couple of years ago on you and your business and interviewing you and your family, and also Robert Davis from Seaside, singing your praises, and Jeff Chick, a very renowned architect in our area, and Alice Beach, head of building division there. I kind of saw it with fresh eyes, not just someone that was helping make it, but just like standing back in preparation for this. And that really was moving. And you and I have talked about, you had said to me a couple of days ago and before that, that you're amazed that some people tell you that was so well done and great, and it actually brought tears to their eyes. And you're like, how is that happening? And so I started thinking about it and I watched it again and I'm like, oh, I know. I think I know why. It's so moving to people because you started from basically nothing and then you grew this empire and with all the great product, reputation, and quality that you have stayed the course on for so many years, and your family members are all still there. Started it with your dad, and then your son Eddie came in. How long ago was that?
I think it's 6 years.
Six
now.
Years ago. Mm-hmm. And then Mary Catherine, your wife, is there, and other family members too. And I think it's just that, the all-American success story, that you can start something from nothing, you can build it, and you look behind you after you've amassed and walked the walk for so many years. It is not something that is done often. And when it's done well, I think it moves people. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think having seen it, you know, people always joke about the 40-year overnight success. Mm-hmm. And in a couple of years, we'll have been in business for 50 years from when my dad started the company. So if you had asked me that that's where we were going back when I was 20-something and starting with my dad, meaning a partner in his business, I probably wouldn't have even been able to articulate any thoughts on that, because it just would have, it was way more than I was. It was double my age. But, you know, you see it now. It's just, I was telling Jerry when he and I were talking before this, and the older you get, it seems the faster time goes. And I know I've always heard it, and probably for young people, it sounds like a joke or something, but it's amazing how it just sneaks up on you. Mm-hmm. You know, life gets busy. You put your head down and you go, and it just suddenly you wake up and here you are. Mm-hmm. So
it's frightening. I agree with you. In the last year and a half, I'm like, I don't know what is happening, but it's like warp speed. And it is a little alarming how fast it does seem to go.
When your memory is able to associate a person that is the age you are now, and you have very clear memories of them from, you know, mm-hmm. 30 years before, mm-hmm. and you see them now, you know, in their 80s, and you realize, wow, how in the world did mm-hmm. that happen? Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine that I was it's just moving. Time moves. Right. It's the way it works.
Well, I think it's an amazing blessing that your dad is still goes to work every day, in the business. And that must be just, I mean, it is something that most people don't get to enjoy. You know, he's had a good long life and he still loves what he does. And he's still, you know, the patriarch and has all the respect and justly so of being the patriarch of that business. Take us back, just because this is the genesis of it all. Your dad was a master craftsman. And how did he get that? What did he do to get that?
Sure. Well, I would say that my dad's just a very exceptional person intellectually and mechanically. He's just been, before he was even in woodworking at a very young age, he was an auto body repair person, and he was phenomenal. Wow. He did things at a very young age that older people couldn't do.
Oh, really?
And this is before Bondo. They used to fill with lead and do all the things that they did to fix cars. He could paint and do everything. Wow. So it's interesting. There's a chapter early in his life that he could have gone that way. He was in the military for 2 years. He and his best friend, who married his sister, my uncle, they decided my uncle was called, this was right before the Korean War, to enter the Army. So my dad decided they'll go in together. Mm-hmm. So there was a 2-year period of his life that just sort of interrupted that flow. Probably matured him tremendously. Mm-hmm. I kind of envy the fact that that generation had that opportunity. I mean, it's scary in ways if you're in war or whatever, but I think it's a great experience for people to give to their country that way. But it matured my dad in a way that made him step back and realize he was starting a family.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that got him into wood was his father. His father had a cabinet shop in Hialeah. And this was in the late 50s. So Cuba was, you know, a bunch of people had just left then. So you had very educated professionals who were fleeing Cuba, coming to South Florida. And most of those people were looking for any kind of job. So, you know, my father and grandfather joined forces, and they were lucky enough to have an incredible workforce of very intelligent, dedicated people. And they made fixtures for banks, they did a lot of real neat jobs down there in South Florida at a time when Miami was only, you know, 30, 40 years old.
Right.
So it was pristine, clean, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's where he learned it.
Mm-hmm. And then did a brief stint in making lobster traps too.
Yeah, that was later on. So my dad and grandfather, they built a business up pretty big. They moved from Miami to South Georgia, and it was a furniture manufacturing company. They had they made ready-to-assemble furniture out of American black walnut, not cheap wood, not plastic. And but there's not a lot of walnut that grows in Miami. And really the rest of the nation that they delivered to was north of Miami. So they realized as this business grew, they were making TV tables and stereo tables. Those things used to be fixtures in a house.
Right.
And now they were putting them with little rabbit ears on a rolling table because most people just had one TV or one stereo, not one in every room. And they would just roll it around the house where they wanted it to be. And so that was a neat little niche that they started and grew. And in the mid-70s, kind of in a time of big consolidation and conglomerates, you know, you had companies like AMC that made bowling balls and Hobie Cat sailboats. And the more things you made, the better your company was, I guess, back then. Mm-hmm. So one of those conglomerates bought my dad and granddad's company. They had a couple of partners, and three of the people were retirement age. My dad was in his 30s. So it was probably a good payday for my dad, but he wasn't going to stop working at that point. So he started doing consulting work for some companies that manufactured wood products. He did some brokering for some of the mills that they bought their lumber for. And at that time, so middle to late 70s, there was a pretty big furniture manufacturing industry in the state of Florida. So the piece of property that was the initial piece that we bought in Youngstown that my father purchased in 1979, he set up and built a building there to just store lumber that he would bring from the Carolinas and Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And then he had a truck and ultimately two trucks that went around distributing that throughout the state. The lobster traps, the crab traps, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. My dad had an uncle who was in the fish business, and we knew about stone crab people that were having a problem keeping their crabs in their traps because the wood that was on their traps was so imprecise that they could crawl out, you right. know, so they'd get in, eat what they wanted, and then get out, and that right. wasn't working real good for anybody. Same thing with the lobsters. Yeah. So they asked my dad to make some samples, and of course, my dad is super, super precise, mm-hmm. and it was probably the most incredible yes. lath they'd ever seen.
I'm sure.
And so, ultimately, that was just a little niche business. It's really what got me in because it was a seasonal business. Mm-hmm. The traps are in the water. Nobody's taking them out to do repairs on them then. But when the season was off, they'd mm-hmm. bring them in. They'd make new traps. They would repair the old traps. And thankfully, the time that the things were in the water was the summertime when I was off school. And my dad basically had a little crew of high school kids mm-hmm. that made these things, and then when school would come back, we'd go, and mm-hmm. you know, there was no need to manufacture mm-hmm. after the summertime.
Wow, so that's how you got your hands started. That was the first thing that you started
that's
building.
Right. Yeah, there are a couple of guys that are still in our area that are entrepreneurs who own their own very successful businesses who worked with me and wow. my dad in the summers.
Okay.
So it was great.
You yes. know how I can appreciate this? You're probably not going to know this about me, is my dad had a lobster boat.
He oh, did. Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know
And
that.
He had 1,000 traps. Mm. So he was like serious about
Were they made out of wood?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know all about this. Yeah. I went out a few times. Two. I didn't like it.
Yeah, that's neat. It's, you know, the industry changed. You know, they used to, I'm sure your dad probably did this too, but they used to soak that wood in like burnt motor mm-hmm, oil mm-hmm. and creosote so mm-hmm. that the marine boring things didn't get in there. And mm-hmm. Obviously that, you know, we later find out like a lot of things, yeah. asbestos, whatever, it's not the best
not
thing
good.
For anything. So
right.
It went to wire trap. So that little market, yeah. that niche, that mm-hmm. opportunity sort of happened at a very opportune time for me and my development. And then it was gone.
Then it was, obsolete. Wow. That's wild. So father and son working in the business together, you know, you learning from your dad, right? He's mentoring you. And then you ended up doing the same thing with different family members and then mm-hmm. and Eddie too. And I find one of the most intriguing things about it from like a core level is the family run business and, you know, legacy building. Your dad says in the documentary, you're supposed to build something that can last past yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And watching that, like his heart, his ethos of like the business basically, and then all the people down in the generations later, three generations, and seeing them work. It must really mean something to your dad to see his family members in the business doing well, thriving, and loving something that he built.
I can only imagine. I mean, I know it from my perspective. Uh-huh. Knowing my dad's background, you know, he was born at the end of the Depression, mm-hmm. the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody in their family worked hard. They weren't wealthy people. Mm-hmm. And, but he had a great work ethic always, you know.
And quality. He wanted quality.
Yeah, he did. And so to imagine from his perspective, looking and seeing that he has, you know, his son, his daughter-in-law, his daughter's husband, mm-hmm. so his son-in-law mm-hmm. in the business, his grandson, his granddaughter, and then the younger grandchildren have worked on summers mm-hmm. at the company. Mm-hmm. You know, what they'll do ultimately is mm-hmm. up to them. Mm-hmm. And then to see that there are families that are in our business who started as one member, and then, you know, they bring in a spouse, a sibling, you know, a child, mm-hmm. and we have multiples of those in our company too. So I know it gives them great pride to see that.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And then when did you decide to partner up with your dad? And was that an automatic, oh, yes, I'm definitely going to do this, or did you have to think about it?
Well, I would say, you know, I told you about those summer jobs. Mm-hmm. So I would think that most anybody who has worked with or for a parent would tell you that that's the toughest boss you can have. Mm-hmm. I would also tell you that when you're in your teens, your perspective of what is hard is a lot lower than it is when you get to be a grown up. Right. You know, it doesn't take much to make you think this is really rough. So, yeah. You know, I would tell you that, that here's the interesting thing. So my mom and dad always wanted me and my sister to go to college, and no one had received a college degree in our bloodline until I did, and then my sister as well. So that was a given. We're going to go to college. Yeah. I went to University of Florida. I thought I was going to be a brain surgeon when I started because my mom and dad thought I was so smart. I'm going to be a brain surgeon. I didn't even have a good, you know, chemistry lab in high school for me to know much about. I found out pretty quick when I went to University of Florida that I was way behind and quite frankly, didn't have a lot of interest in that. Uh-huh. I took my first economics class and I was just lit up and excited. And then when I took my first finance class, I was just really, really excited about that. So I just took a lot of finance, economics, accounting classes. It was obvious that I just had a tremendous interest in business. I decided after getting my degree, my bachelor's degree, that I was going to go ahead and get my MBA because I didn't think I would come back. I just felt like if I'm going to do it, let me do it now. So after getting my undergraduate degree, I thought I was probably going to go to Tampa or Miami and work in a bank, you know, and some, you know, work my way up that system. My wife, Mary Catherine, graduated at the top of her class in accounting at University of Florida. And back then they were the number one accounting program in the country. And she had offers to go pretty much anywhere she wanted to go. So we kind of were thinking that was going to be our life. 1 year into my master's program, Mary Catherine's a couple years younger than me. My dad probably sensed that this was slipping, you know, that his baby was going to maybe go somewhere else and not come back home. And he had actually sold the company. You know, I told you about the wire traps. Yes. That wasn't good for it. And my dad was at an age and a place, I guess, financially that he didn't need to keep that thing going. And so he had sold it to a family that ran it. And they had kind of the opposite probably experience that we did in that it, you know, not everything worked great with family, you know, and my dad had financed it. He took the property back and there really wasn't a going business. So at that moment, 1 year into my master's program, my dad said, "Hey, I've got this back. I could put it back up for sale again and sell the property and the buildings, or I can make you a 50% partner in nothing, but we'll build it from our scratch." My part of the bargain was I had to come up with a business plan. So having experienced what we did all the time that we were together and knowing that we made beautiful fence boards, you know, the fence boards that you see outside with the little dog-eared clip corners on them, ours were perfect. You know?
I'm sure they were.
The thicknesses were perfect. The widths were perfect. But we couldn't sell them for 10 cents more than the people that didn't make them perfectly. And you know, that kind of struck a chord to know that whatever we do, since we can't help ourselves, whatever we do, we're going to do it at a high level of precision. We've got to make sure that we're doing things that people value that quality. And so moldings and things, ironically now where it's very contemporary and minimalist in that regard, it was a big thing starting in the 80s. You know, it was a comeback of that traditional architectural interior design. And so that's what we started. We you know, purchased a molder together. My dad and I went on a trip to the Carolinas and then up to the Northeast. I was so depressed in a way because the only thing we could afford was this thing that looked like Frankenstein. I saw this beautiful, shiny, painted piece of equipment that my dad said would be no good because it wasn't heavy enough. It would make a bunch of chatter marks and all. I now understand that. But then I was like wanting the new shiny thing. And this battle-scarred looking, it was the molder was 20 years retired from Thomasville Furniture Industries.
Okay.
And that was it. But I knew my dad was a great mechanical mind, and he had that thing running and beautiful and painted so that when we looked at it, it was nice. And that's how we started.
Wow.
So we started doing that together, and then it just kind of grew from that point.
From that point till now, was there ever a period of time where the custom woodworking and millwork wasn't in style like it is now, or when it started, you know, coming back in the 80s?
Well, I would say it's always been in style. It's just shifted.
Okay.
So we're in the 80s and 90s, we did just, you know, loads of crown molding and baseboards and chair rail and, you know, all of that. And today there's just not a lot of that. But what there is a lot of now are very beautiful decorative gates or wooden ceilings, you know, things that are focal points, you know. So it's always been there. It's just different.
Yeah, just different. Wow. And then what you've built that till now is just like exponential growth. That seems to have just been always on an upcline. And maybe that was true even when Hurricane Michael hit 5 years ago.
Yeah, I'd say that there was a decline that everybody had when
everybody collectively
in 2008 through, I'd say 11 was probably the hardest decline period.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say that's when my dad's Depression era mentality helped us the most because we never took on debt and we only grew with what we could do.
Right.
So that's
brilliant.
That was great.
Yeah.
You know, and again, being a young person that liked shiny new things,
yes.
I was always wondering why we couldn't get new forklifts or this or that. They would have required us to borrow money. And, you know, his way definitely was the smart way.
Right.
Here I am, the guy with the finance degree and the MBA, and my dad's got the degree in hard knocks, and that's the one that really helped us get through that period. But other than that period, it's been a nice, good growth.
So I wonder, I think I know the answer to this, Youngstown, kind of like in the middle of nowhere, and then who knew several years later, well, maybe not that many years later, 10, 15 years later, that the new urbanism movement was going to strike here, with Seaside being the first, followed by Rosemary Beach, Alice Beach, Watercolor, Watersound, now Kaya. What a perfect location that was for your business to serve our area right now, which I call architecture nirvana. And you would call it probably millwork nirvana, because where else in a concentrated area in the world has so many tricked out homes?
No doubt. I mean, people ask me, they always have asked me, what in the world made you pick this? And of course, I didn't pick it. My father did. Their business that they had before, they had railroad frontage and they had rail cars that came in with all that walnut. So my dad felt it was really important that we'd be right on the railroad.
Yeah.
Of course, we've never had a railroad car come into our property, but that was
part of it.
But
they're still there, right? The tracks?
The tracks are there, and they get used twice a day. But I think the big thing was we needed that. And then he wanted a lot of land because he knew enough, being in Hialeah, that you can't make a lot of noise when there are people all around you.
Right.
And woodworking equipment isn't the quietest.
Right.
So we were out there in the middle of, like you say, nowhere. And nowhere anymore. It used to be, it used to be 15 miles from everything. Now it's 5 miles from everything, you know?
No.
So it's amazing how this area is growing.
Amazing.
But then to have known what was coming, you know, when the Davis family did what they did at Seaside, I think probably most people in this area thought that was just crazy.
They did.
You know, it was these little bitty lots and these little bitty houses that any of us would love to buy them at those prices now. But they seemed high then, you know, and the whole concept of it, you know, everything's on each other. Well, it was tremendous. It was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge hit all over the world, really. And so, we couldn't have been in a better place.
Yeah. So now that you brought up Robert too, and then, I mean, how many homes did you end up doing in Seaside? You had to have done, like, I don't even know if you can count.
I can only tell you. Back when we started, I worked in the sawmill with my dad and a couple other guys. Mm-hmm. And the first things that we made the most of was columns out of cypress, because we were making those lobster traps and crab traps out of cypress. And so we made columns. We would plane them. And when I say we, I mean we. It was, that's what we do. And then we'd load them on a truck, and then I would be the delivery person.
Wow.
And a lot of the guys that have made their name as builders here, they were all young bucks back then. And I would be on one end and they'd be on the other, and we'd be hauling these beams and columns and things off of our truck for them to do. So, I mean, from the very beginning, we were doing things. It just, quite frankly, when Seaside started, it was all, they were all very simple little houses. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a lot of, right. It was all wood, mm-hmm. but they didn't have the ornamentation right. that they have now.
Right.
So just like our business evolved in the kind of millwork we did, you know, Seaside did as it developed. And quite frankly, having been in several developments that started from scratch, mm-hmm. they all do. Mm-hmm. They start out one way and then they get better and better and bigger mm-hmm. And nicer and
but Robert didn't think that was going to happen. He thought that they were all going to be modest homes, and that's what the vision was. And then, you know, that even was something he didn't see coming. You know, I'm sure he's thankful for it.
It's because, like a town, though. I mean, yeah. you know, the town starts modestly, right. and then there's prosperity, and some people benefit from that, and you have the bigger homes right. and the nice street that everybody takes the tour of the family down when they come in to right. visit from somewhere else.
So. Right. Well, that must have, when you got the job on the Seaside Chapel then, from, you know, you being there somewhat since the beginning, that must have been a big coup for you to be able to do all of that work.
Yeah. And you know, what's embarrassing is at the moment, there's no way that I had a concept of how incredible it was. Mm-hmm. If it was me today, I would recognize it at that moment, mm-hmm. what a thing this was. For me, it was neat. It was a lot of challenging new things mm-hmm. that we hadn't done before. I really remember some conversations that I had with Scott Merrill after that project, because mm-hmm. I was just so proud of every single thing we had done. And he pointed out a couple little things that you know, me being a real efficient woodworker that I did that were inadvertent things that he wouldn't have wanted from an architectural perspective. Still beautiful. Uh-huh. I won't tell you what they are because most people wouldn't know what they are.
Don't tell. Scott, don't tell. Well, you know, Scott Merrill is still on the Seaside board, Seaside Institute board of directors too, and is heavily involved with the Seaside Prize. So you will see him again now that EF San Juan is going to be a premium sponsor of the Seaside Prize 2024. In February, that we're super happy about. And Robert says on camera in your documentary, as he's we filmed him in the Seaside Chapel a couple of years ago, and he's marveling at like the woodwork and everything that you did. And he said there wasn't another company that could ever have done this besides EF San Juan.
And I would
say, so much pride.
Sure. In our area, then that's absolutely was true. You know, that was true. And I learned so much. And then, you know, again, working with people like Scott mm-hmm. And understanding the details that those kind of minds
right.
look at.
For anyone that doesn't know, like who's listening, Scott Merrill is a renowned architect and highly respected.
I think he was a town architect for Seaside back then.
He was.
You know, just a phenomenal opportunity for us that I did not know what it was when it happened, mm-hmm. but to see what it's become, I mean, it's an iconic mm-hmm. Structure in Seaside, just like the post office, you know, everybody recognizes those.
Right.
And just super neat to have been involved and mm-hmm. to learn from it, like everything,
right.
you know, it was just wonderful. And the right. people were great.
Mm-hmm. In Surf We Trust is a home, in Seaside as well, that you basically have your thumbprint is on that in a very big way. Talk about that, if you will, like the staircase and you working on that with your dad and how you had to figure out the geometry of how that was going to work. What was that like? Because that's one of my favorite houses.
Yeah, that was just really neat. I think the timing of that project was very cool. You know, we talked about that downturn. Mm-hmm. When that home was built, it was right kind of in the bottom. And to be able to have a project was a great thing for anybody that was in business at that moment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we just loved that family committed to building at a time when, you know, it would have been easy not to do anything. Mm-hmm. They were confident in where they were and what it was going to be. And so doing that job meant a lot to us because we had scaled way back, you know, and so it was one of probably a half dozen times where Edward and Ed had to go back into the shop and do work. And so my dad and I did a lot of work together on that project. And that's typically how we did after the initial, what we built together doing the work, we would come in and be sort of like the special forces. We'd come in and, you know, do the weird stuff that was going to consume everybody. And, and that handrail, I learned so much. I mean, again, my dad's, mindset for perfection and the way he can think things through, you know, I was like, just like on day one when, you know, we worked, I was like, how in the world are we going to do this?
Right.
You know?
And it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it was great. There were so many challenges on that job. It was just so much fun, so much fun. And then, you know, the architects that we work with, Curtis and Wyndham out of Houston, phenomenal, you know, the things that they, again, the attention to detail, you know, the the idea that if you look at the stair system, the risers on the steps are exactly coincidental with the plank widths on the radiused wall. And they're radiused, the planks are radiated, you know, so, I mean, and it had to stay that way for three floors, essentially. So it was a tremendous amount of effort required to make that happen. And you know, again, starting from early jobs where every little detail mattered, you know, having to work with people like Scott, working with Leon Creer on Creer House, and just recognizing what it is. And then having a person like my dad who was naturally wound that way. It just made it so much fun.
Who built that in Surf We Trust? Benoit?
Yes.
Laurent? Yeah. Amazing. So, we've known each other, like I said, at the beginning for a while. You've been a partner with the magazine. And then about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we started doing some marketing with you. Five years ago. And we had a contract and it was supposed to start in October. And then in September, Hurricane Michael happened. And we had evacuated to Savannah. And I turned the TV on to see like how, what kind of damage our area was getting. And I saw that Mexico Beach, who was a client of ours for 9 years. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't.
And you, nearby neighboring Youngstown, was decimated. And I couldn't even process what I was seeing on TV, that an entire town was gone. And then what you were going through. And then I had called you. I think you called me back a day later or something. And I said, I'm so sorry. I can't believe it. What kind of damage did you get? Because I didn't know at that time exactly what damage you got. And your facility and your plant also was decimated. And then I found that out on the call. And then I said, Edward, you don't have to do the con. I mean, I don't forget it. Don't worry about it. And then you said to me, well, if this was yesterday, like, I don't even know what I'd exactly be saying right now, but it's today. And we decided to go full bore. Like, I forget what you, Winston Churchill, did you say? You were just going to go like, you know, never, never give up. Right.
Right.
And then we started working together. But what was that like? So you're painting this amazing story. Your trajectory is always on an incline. Things seem like they were really just like progressing. You had totally hit a wonderful stride. And then that happened. What kind of fortitude, resolve, commitment, and devastation, like how did you weather that?
Well, you know, for any company that stays around for as long as we have, and I know that's, you know, it's long for a family business, but there have been many that have been around longer. You have these moments, and there's constantly, you've got to embrace change, whether it's from a hurricane or economic conditions or whatever, an untimely death. But change happens, and if the business continues, it's something that you have to adapt to. So for us, you know, we didn't plan for this. Days before, I didn't even think it was a thing we needed to worry about. When it happened, the change for us was that the way we were working, you know, it was, things were crazy. We had come out of the downturn. Business had come back again. Our area was growing. There was tremendous demand for everything. And we were still operating our company like an entrepreneurial small company with two guys making a lot of the decisions. We had a lot of smart, smart people. But I guess I'll say it was an autocratic sort of a system, you know. It's what we knew. I you know, we weren't trying to be bossy or felt like that's the way we needed to be, but that's the way it worked before. So I think that what it did is it created a situation where we had a couple of key people, one of them being my son, that was like, you know, I'm not really sure that this is what I want to keep doing. You know, I've had a taste of mm-hmm. this, and I have options. And honestly, I had enough memory to know that you do have those periods where you have those thoughts mm-hmm. and things need to change for it to be right. Mm-hmm. So I was thankful that was expressed. Mm-hmm. If it hadn't been for the hurricane, probably wouldn't have made it so easy to discuss that mm-hmm. because, you know, the father-son relationship is one where mm-hmm. you don't want to disappoint. It's mm-hmm. what makes it so difficult mm-hmm. for many. Mm-hmm. And so we made a change that just completely changed our trajectory, quite mm-hmm. frankly. Mm-hmm. We'd be a great company if we didn't have the hurricane, but I think we'd be a company that peaked and faded out as the owners, you know, left this world, I would say.
Right.
But the way we are now, we've created an incredible team. We've got an incredible management system. You know, my brother-in-law is really our integrator. He's the one that drives that.
Is that Buddy?
Buddy. Mm-hmm. Brian Klein, who's he's like a part of our family. Mm-hmm. He's our, mm-hmm. I guess in our senior leadership team, the only non-family member, but he's like a part of our family. He's incredible. He's a cut from the same mold as I'd say, well, probably all of us, but mm-hmm. I'll say my dad from a standpoint of his work ethic. Mm-hmm. We're all hard workers, but Brian really, he mm-hmm. carries a load and he's mm-hmm. something else. Mm-hmm. But the way we are now, I can see a future that this company continues to grow and continues to create opportunities for our family and other families in terms of, you know, a better life, the challenges, the rewards that you get from creating the beautiful things we do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have TVs in all of our buildings mm-hmm. and we show photos of our jobs so that our employees can see them mm-hmm. and they love seeing the work that they've done. I mean, they don't get to just go out and tour every house.
Right.
And quite frankly, I don't. I see more from right. that than I do from anything.
Right.
But it's just I think that hurricane was a gift.
It recalibrated
you. It really mm-hmm. was something that who would plan to have that happen,
right.
but it really turned into something incredible for
right.
us.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is amazing that you stayed the course too and just did it, just weathered it, just rebuilt it. And in a really seemingly from my vantage point, a ridiculously fast amount of time.
Sure.
I mean, wasn't the building erected in under a year?
So that was the neat thing is that we kind of just said, okay, we're going to divvy up how we do this. So my dad was completely in charge of like getting all the structures back, getting our infrastructure back in place. And my brother-in-law, Brian, Eddie, me, my wife, and the rest of our team were responsible for just keeping the wheels on and fulfilling mm-hmm. obligations and finding ways to make it happen. We had incredible customers who were very supportive of us. You know, right at the beginning, what they did, almost 100 people showed up that were mm-hmm. contractors and their employees and all to help us clean everything up and clear everything out. That was phenomenal. They all made their trade people available so that we could get back up on our feet. Mm-hmm. But wow. kind of digressing to say that we broke things up so that my dad was running the show of our infrastructure back. Uh-huh, and in a year and a half, he had every single building back and new buildings that we didn't even have before. So it was, I mean, we were running everything within a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And the molder department had to be big equipment, all electric had to be redone mm-hmm. and put temporarily in a building that used to be that sawmill building mm-hmm. from back in the crab trap days.
Yeah, oh, wow.
And that one took about 2 months to get going and online. But
impressive.
It really was an incredible group effort. It was not a singular effort. It was everybody just piling in. And then the help of friends and even competition that helped us, you know, and offered warehouse space and whatever we needed to, you know, keep things rolling. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all see, if not by the grace of God, there go I.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's a thing that I
yes.
felt was incredible. And I mean, it just gives me chills still thinking about how that was.
I know. Unbelievable.
It was great.
Well, and with your sponsorship and your collaboration with the Seaside Institute, I don't know if you know that it's their 20th anniversary. Hmm. And then they have asked you to customize and make a beautiful wooden box for the recipient of the key for the Seaside Prize too, which is just like, you know, just like amazing to me, like everything that we're talking about right now and like honoring all the people that like were part of the whole story and whatnot. I think we'd be a tad remiss if I just didn't give a shout out to Corey Vogt Architects, because you do a lot of work with them. And then this is your handiwork on the cover and their handiwork as architects too, with them recently winning the coveted Arthur Ross Award. And you do a lot of work in Alice Beach with them as well. Like, yeah. Just like you did with Seaside, yeah. Like kind of like building that town from the ground up.
Eric and Marianne are just, first of all, just incredibly kind and talented people. They're wonderful. And their staff is just very capable, very kind. Mm-hmm. They do incredible work.
They do.
You know, we're just blessed to be in a place where that's the kind of thing that exists mm-hmm. for us as mm-hmm. a company that loves details and mm-hmm. loves to be precise and accurate and challenged. Mm-hmm. There's no shortage of that
in
Alice.
And then I wanted to give you a special thank you that I've already given you, but then just give it to you publicly for joining forces with us for the Heritage of V Legacy Show Home that we labored over for almost 2 years, that we had the grand opening this past September, and the work that you did with us there. And that was a big deal for us too. And my husband, Jerry Burwell, was the architect on that beautiful home too, with the Tricolis as the developers. And so we got to do so many fun things, and I like that video too. I love you on that video when we did that interview. That was amazing. You're so good on camera.
Well, I love how you push me into my non-comfort zone.
I know you didn't want to do that the year before I mentioned. You're like, no, I don't want to do that. So I'm like, well, I'll just ask him a second time, like a couple years later. And then, you know, you were part of it.
It was a blast.
It meant a big deal. It was a big deal to us.
No, the whole thing was phenomenal. I mean, it was so well done. And honestly, Lisa, anything that you guys put together is always first class.
Thank you.
I mean, it's a privilege to be involved with you all because you do things so well.
Thank
just
you.
Like we try to
do. We feel the same. We feel the same.
Definitely symbiotic.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here. I know you're a super busy guy and too many more wonderful things happening, and congratulations on all of your success, and everything that you touch basically turns to gold.
Well, thanks for being a part of it.
You're welcome. I hope you enjoyed this episode of V Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. Edward and his family are just terrific, wonderful people. And I hope you go to their website and look at all their handiwork and art, basically. Have a good day, everyone. Bye-bye. Thank you to our sponsors, Rose & Company. Owners David and Carrie DiGregorio have just hit it out of the park with the most gorgeous boutique in Grand Boulevard. They are the purveyors of the most unique and gorgeous, hard-to-find flowers, and curate the most unique species of roses and flowers, and there's a lot of artistry involved in it. If you have a special occasion and you want to show somebody how much you love them, you've got to get your floral arrangements from them, and they trick out our studio and make it look beautiful every single time we have our podcast, and they have unique bespoke items, and they also carry Versace china, which is just adorable. Like, who doesn't need that, right? And so if you want to visit them, go to Grand Boulevard, or if you want to order flowers online, go to their website, roseandcompanyflowers.com.